You're listening to the Net Mums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry. Coming up on this week's show...
I say this to people a lot who suffer from imposter syndrome. I'm not the one who made the decision as to whether or not I was good enough to be on Dragon's Den. That was not my call. That was an executive producer that was signed off by a commissioner, that was signed off by the head of BBC. You know, they are the people who decide who's good enough to be a dragon. And they decided I was good enough. So my job is to just go and live up to that expectation and go and be the best version of me that I can be.
Hello, folks. Welcome to another episode of the Net Mums podcast. Now, Alison, I am in deep turmoil because on Friday, my daughter, who is 13, goes to Italy on a school trip for a whole 8 days. And I'm absolutely, pardon the language, folks, shitting bricks about the fact that she's leaving me. Like, she's 13. Am I being overprotective parent or is this perfectly normal?
I think it's normal. I think it's totally normal. I mean, yeah, my eldest is 14 and I think if she went away for a week, I would be slightly on edge.
Well, she a night or two in primary school, but it was, down the road at a scout camp. This is Italy!
Is she feeling okay about it? Is she feeling quite
confident?
She's
over the moon. She's so excited. She's like packing and repacking and deciding how many bags of sweets she can fit in her bag versus knickers at the moment.
Then I think, Wendy, my advice to you is just to go with it. You just need to get through that week without panicking, worrying too much, and just focus on the fact that she's going to have an amazing time and she's going to come back, probably with an Italian boyfriend. I mean, I'm not going to worry you.
Okay, listen, our guest today has got children in the same sort of ballpark as this, so you introduce her and we'll see what she says.
Well, our guest today, Wendy, is a right dragon, but I promise that I'm not being rude because Sarah Davies is a well-known face from Dragon's Den, and now her new BBC One series, The Big Idea Works, features everyday people who've come up with a clever idea for a new product, but they just don't know where to start in getting it made. We've also seen her twirl around in sparkly frocks on Strictly, and she is someone that you and I, Wendy, would quite like to go for a wine with. Sarah, welcome to the Net Mums podcast.
Oh, hey, when we getting that wine in? That sounds right up my street. I'm in.
Well,
I'm
in. It's midday. It's past the yard arm. We could. No one would mind.
Totally. She says drinking a Barocca as we're going.
So you got to prepare. You got to prepare.
So you've got two boys. Is that right, Sarah?
I do. Our Oliver is my oldest, butter wouldn't melt, nothing's a problem, perfect little, you know, 11-year-old. And then second child syndrome, I've got a Charlie who's 8. And need I say any more?
We have had this conversation. We both have a younger one and, in Alison's case, twin younger ones. And they're Harridans compared to the older ones.
I just think as a parent, life hasn't prepared us to deal with what that is. And I always remember me and my friend, Mira, one of my best friends. She was the same as me. We were the older child and we both had a younger sibling. And we used to joke about how we were the perfect children and how our parents clearly didn't know how to cope with our younger siblings. And I used to laugh about that when I was a teenager. And now I'm like, oh my God, it's true. I totally know. You've got no idea.
So what is family life like? Is it muddy boots by the door and balls everywhere and games consoles? Is that kind of like home life in your house?
All of that. The two boys are absolutely obsessed with football. And I mean, I'm a little bit embarrassed to admit, I still don't really understand the offside rule. And our Oliver's just started playing the offside rule. So I get a little bit excited on the sidelines. I'm like, oh, it's going to be a goal. It's going to be... Oh, it's offside. Oh, what's blooming offside? So I've got no idea with all of this. We don't play it at our Charlie's age, so I can just be the excitable mum on the side of the pitch when my husband has to tell us to pipe down a little bit. They love school, which is brilliant. I try and get them to do... The whole world would be football given the option, but I try and get them to do other stuff. So, for example, they both do karate. And believe it or not, I'll translate for the rest of the country. My mum... used to take them on a Monday night to their class when I couldn't make it, and they don't like that she couldn't go in the dojo, which is just the fancy name for the sports hall. And our Oliver was so nervous that he couldn't see her. So my mum joined the karate class so that she could be in the room with them.
No. No,
she's amazing.
We call her Kung Fu Sue. She's a brown belt now. My mum, she's been going to this karate class now for 4 years, and she's like, waha, let's be having you. Yeah.
And is she actually doing the class?
Yeah, yeah. Yes. She's a brown belt. She's, you know, she's worked away from her tatters. So, yeah, at 62-year-old, so I'm very proud of her. So yes. So the boys, yes, a lot of football, bit of karate and cricket. I'm trying to get them into cricket because, you know, I was into cricket when I was younger. That's how me and my husband met. So I'm trying to teach them the whole world doesn't revolve around football. And then, yes, they're at that age whereby all they want to do is play on the games consoles. And I don't want to be that man that just bans them from doing it when all their friends are allowed, but I also don't want them sitting on there for hours. And we're at the age where they're desperate to have mobile phones, and I'm like, I'm the man that says no.
So
that's the stage that we're in.
It's a tricky stage, isn't it? Also, we chatted to quite a few boy mums on here, and a lot of them say that they've been asked lots if they, you know, if they always really wanted a girl, especially if they've got a couple of boys. Is that something that you've been asked a lot? Do you, when they were younger, were you kind of asked, oh, are you going to try for a girl now?
Do you know, I think every, I guess it's always the dream. People seem to want, you, one of each would be perfect, wouldn't it? And then you get both flavours. And so I've got two boys, and ironically, my sister's got a little girl, and she's pregnant with a second, who's also another little girl. And I'm like, yep, that's just right. You know, I'll have two boys, you have two girls. So I kind of get the girl thing with my little Gracie. So I get to be an auntie, which is almost as good as being a mum to a little girl. And of course, I think everybody, I would have loved to have done all the ballet classes. And actually, I say this, our little Gracie, she's just joined karate with me mum as well, and she's at football classes too. So, amazing. Do you know, and I make sure my boys do plenty of arts and crafts and everything as well. So I'm not having this stereotyping of the girls do this and the boys do that. But I must admit, now they're getting a little bit older, and I see what some of my friends' mums are dealing with girls, you know, when they're going into the big school and all of that, and I think, oh wow, I don't know if I could cope.
We've got five girls between us, so we're fully in the girl mum, teenage girls are cowbags.
And teenage boys,
I didn't want to say it, but that's what it looks like.
Yeah. And teenage boys, I feel like, I mean, this is a generalization, but I feel like looking around, teenage boys just seem a little bit simpler, whereas teenage girls are a bit more complex. A bit trickier to parents, shall we say.
Yeah, that's, I think you've hit the nail on the head there nicely. Yes, it is not lost on me that my biggest worry is how dirty the muddy boots are. That's, you know, that is not lost on me as a boy mum at all.
So you've talked a bit about ensuring that your boys' feet remain on the ground. Is it true that you do camping holidays rather than the lavish five-star holidays to keep, you know, things a bit real at home?
I do, and it's I'm a firm believer that I am the way I am, and I've got the values that I have because of the way my parents brought me up. And when I was little, we didn't have much money, so we had to go on camping holidays because we couldn't afford to go abroad. But I think that really shaped who I was as a person, and it gives you an appreciation for money. And it's really hard because on one hand, I work really, really hard so that we can afford to go on wonderful big family holidays. But at the same time, I don't want my kids to only have those experiences so that they don't appreciate the value. So we try and get a balance. So, for example, it was just over a year ago, I decided every couple of years I'm going to do a once-in-a-lifetime amazing big trip and teach them some amazing cultural stuff. So we went to Japan and we did, we did Tokyo and we did the Old World Kyoto. We also went to Disneyland and things like that. But, you know, I wanted them to experience the culture. But then also last week I spent two weeks touring around the Scottish Highlands with them in the camper van, which is a... I don't want to be derogatory to me dad, but it's not a top-of-the-range camper van, let's just say. It was a clapped-out old van that had done its 150,000 mile that we picked up for £5,000, and then me dad got a caravan for the tip from 500 quid, and he retrofit all the bits out the caravan into the camper van and was very proud of himself for pulling the whole thing in for £13,000. So the irony of it all, I got asked to go on £1 million motorhomes. So you then you see the big £1 million motorhomes, and then he's me and my dad. My dad's like, yep, and I did them solar panels for £2,000, and I'm pulled a blinder there. So, but I wanted the kids to, that's the childhood I had, you know, and yeah. that's, and I love it. And I want them to appreciate that the beauty of that isn't the money that we were spending. You know, it can be just as exciting staying somewhere that's 30 quid a night as a hotel that's 300 or even more per night.
Yeah. Now, when you read articles about you, your £35 million fortune is quite often mentioned. Do you feel any pressure? Like, for example, when it comes to like the PTA school fair and buying raffle tickets or like making donations, like, you know, if to fix the school roof or whatever, do you feel like all eyes are on you? Like, come on, love, cough up.
I tell you what the worst is when we get invited to go to like charity events and there's and I just not, I sit there and I'm thinking, they're just all expecting me to bid a lot of money to buy some footballer's shirt that's signed that I've got no interest in having that I'll then have to put up in my house because I paid all that money for. So, yes, I feel the pressure then. Do you know when I use it to my advantage, though? People really quite intimidated by me often, and I hate that because if you meet me, I'm the least intimidating person in the world. But if you haven't met me or you don't know me, just the fact that I'm a dragon and I'm quite a big personality. But I tell you when I use it to my advantage, if it's like the fundraising for the football club or the cricket club, and I always say, yes. Give me the raffle tickets. And yes. I'll go around and I will relieve you of your money. So I'll see someone and I'll say, how many raffle tickets would you like? And I'll see them get a wadge of cash out and they'll go, oh, I'll have £5 worth, please. And I'll go, do you know what? You might as well have 20 and then I don't need to worry about the change.
I love it.
I'll go, were you wanting 10 or 20 pounds with a raffle ticket? 10, when you knew they were only going to buy two. So I'm brilliant at that sort of thing. So I use it to my advantage as well as it being a negative thing.
I'm always curious when people who are celebrities who are in the public eye get involved in the school WhatsApp group. Do you stay well clear of that or do you get well stuck in?
No, I just, for me, and I love a good WhatsApp group. I run my life on WhatsApp, but I can't cope with the volume. Oh, my God. I mean, there's one of the mums, I must admit, she's also a little bit like me, can't cope with the volume. We're sick of the whole, does anybody have so-and-so's PE shorts? They haven't come on tonight. So
what
endless.
Are the spellings for this week? That's the one on ours.
The spellings are terrible. So I just, I have to mute them. But I will nip in, you know, just to show my face every now and again, because I don't want them to think, oh, that dragon girl, she doesn't comment. So, I can't read everyone. And what I did was I made really good friends with the receptionist. On the first
clever.
And I said to her, if there's ever an issue, like if there's ever anything I need, you know, like if it's, they need to wear yellow socks this day for such and such or whatever, or they need 50p to buy a cake or whatever, she just drops us a little email now. So now that's I don't have good. To worry about remembering all this stuff. I just know if there's something important going on, she drops us a little email.
And then she gets a really nice bottle of wine at Christmas. That's the way it works, right?
And the rest. I even made her a handmade card. She's right.
I bet you did. I bet you did. Before we go on, Wendy, have you got a new magic drill somewhere in your house going on?
It's very annoying. It's the washing machine, which somebody put on my husband, and it is decided to take off in the other room. So I've been trying to mute myself so that you don't all have to listen. It should shut up in a minute. I'm really
it's
sorry.
It's on the spin cycle. It's so noisy. Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
That's real life, isn't it? That's what we do. We're doing a podcast recording. We're juggling this. We're
drinking. I've got to get the stuff ready for skiing. That's the problem.
This is it. Now, Zara, are you seeing any entrepreneurial sparks in your sons? Do you think they're going to follow in your footsteps?
Oh, yes. I certainly am. So one of the things I really struggle with is I keep the kids out of the public eye, and it's really difficult. And a big part of me doesn't want to, because I want to be a role model for other working mums, and I want to show you how I juggle it all. And that part of that's the reality of juggling the kids. But it scared the bejesus out of me when I did Strictly, and there was like reporters hiding in the bushes outside my house and that. So it freaked me out, something chronic. So we just took the kids off all social media, and now I'll show them, but like from the back, so you can never see their faces. And that's how I kind of do it, right? That's the way I get away with it. However, my youngest wants to be in there. So, for example, I said that million-pound motorhome show when we did a little segment. I wanted people to see that I was away camping with the kids. So I just had the kids, like, cycling off in the background. But Charlie kept coming up to the cameraman and going, is it my turn on there now? You know, because he wants to be in front of the camera. So he came home from school a couple of weeks ago with a business plan. He'd drawn out, he's obviously heard me talking about it because we watch The Den sometimes. So he's drawn out a business plan, and his business plan is he wants to start a YouTube channel, as do so many 8-year-olds these days, right? But he's got it sussed, right? So he's coming with his business plan, and he's like, Mummy, I've got a business plan for my business. I don't need you to invest. I'm going to do it, right? So he said, so I'm doing it with Elliot and Xander. And the reason why he's doing it with Elliot and Xander is because Xander's mummy works in marketing, so she could set up a YouTube channel. And Elliot's big brother has an iPhone 15 that we're going to borrow. So he's worked out his workforce.
He's
got this, and he's worked out how many subscribers he's going to get and all of this. I didn't want to ask him what his commercial model was because he had no idea of how he was going to make money. But do you know what? We've made a good start. So I was really pleased to see that little entrepreneurial spark.
I love that.
Well, your new series, The Big Idea Works, is all about helping people turn these ideas into reality. And is that the biggest stumbling block, do you think, for wannabe inventors? The actual getting from, I've got this really good idea, to actually doing something with it?
Totally. So, I mean, the premise for the show is, I remember when I first started out, I had this idea. Everybody made handmade cards in my industry, but they could never get the right size envelope to fit the card. So if I could take one of our card folding boards and fudge it so that it would make envelopes instead, that would be brilliant. And my dad's an engineer. So my dad helped us actually how to do that and turn that into a working product and a working prototype. Once I had the prototype, I was flying. I was off applying for my patent, launching the business. I see so many mums, I think a big time in people's lives is when they're on maternity leave and they have a baby and there's all these baby products, but then they come up with all these ideas of, wouldn't it be brilliant if there was something that did this or something for that? And we have all these ideas, but people have no idea how to go from having an idea to making it into a product. And actually on the show, we had quite a few mums coming up with ideas for products within their life that would really help them, which could be a way for them to launch a business as well.
I think it's because we're all desperate.
I need something to make this work. This is it. When I was on maternity leave with my eldest, who's now 14, I remember iPhones were quite new at the time. They'd only been around for a few years. And I came up with a couple of really good app ideas that I reckon would have made me a small fortune. But I didn't have a clue how to get them made. So I just had the idea. I thought, I wish someone would do that. And then didn't do anything about it. And then they have actually been developed by other people since then. What's your advice to any parent thinking that they've got an idea for a product or a business and they haven't a clue how to even begin getting it off the ground?
Yeah. So the first thing I always say to people is, do you want to run your own business? Because I think that's a really big consideration. Because I always say it's a lot different to just having a job. You know, running your own business isn't a career choice, it's a lifestyle choice. There's no line between, when you guys all know this, even running the podcast, there's no line between where the business finishes and your life starts. It all just merges into one. And not everybody wants that in their life. Not everyone's cut out for what comes with that. You know, I'll have other mums say to us, oh, it must be great, you get to work your own hours, fit around the school runs and the childcare needs. And I think, yeah, you've got no idea.
Right.
You've got no idea of the sacrifices and the hard work it takes and everything, okay? But so if you're through that and you think this is what you need, this is the route you want to go down, the idea is often the easy bit. It's getting, like you say, you've got the idea. How do I get that idea made into a product? And then commercially, how do I launch that? You know, it's once you've got the prototype, are we licensing the product to somebody else? Are we going to fund it ourselves? Are we going to, get an investor? Are we going to use a bank overdraft? How are we going to start and launch the product? How are we going to build a business? And I get loads of people follow me, actually. I do like a little series called The 6-Minute Entrepreneur on my YouTube. And it's just, they're just little 6-minute nuggets of advice for anybody who's wanting to start a business or is running a small business. Kind of know where to get started, as it was.
So what was your favourite invention on the programme then?
Oh, it's like asking about me kids, isn't it? Which is me kids. So we did have a one that I think was quite exciting. So, you know when... Right, and it was a kid's invention. So, you know, all these people have invented suction plate things so that when you're feeding your baby and you put your suction plate on, the baby can't pull it up, right? But they only work that way. Let's face it, they only work that way on the IKEA high chair, don't they? When it's on that really smooth surface. They all say that, but you can't put it onto some wood or another surface like that, no chance, because it hasn't got the plastic on plastic suction, right? So this woman came in with this, and she'd come up with this idea, this invention of bopping it in the middle, so where you would push down and it would form a suction and then it would stick, right? Brilliant idea. So our inventors managed to make her prototype, but they also took it to another level whereby they'd worked out by mixing some substances together, they created a new type of mat, which is a really, it doesn't feel sticky, but the type of molecules in it, you would lie the mat down onto any surface, then put your suction plate on the top, and even on wood. I can remember we were in the studio, which is like our workshop, and we had a wooden stool, so it had a wooden surface. Try to put the boppy plate on the top, lift straight off. Put this material down, put that on the top. Doesn't matter how hard you lift it, we were lifting up the whole stool, and it was like magic. Wow. And as a mother, I'm like... And I could not understand how it had worked, but I was just absolutely fascinated. And that's the end.
We've all peeled Weetabix off the walls for the reason that those bowls don't work.
We have. Brilliant.
So when you started your business, what was the best bit of advice that you were given, the kind of the one that stayed with you that you pass on?
Yes, brilliant question. So it was my university tutor. So I started my own business, and it was while I was at university and I was in my last year at uni, and I needed a website. So I went off to see this tutor at university to ask him if he could tell me where I could go and take night classes and to learn how to build a website. And because that's back in the days before you had YouTube and stuff to learn. And I remember he said to me, he said, don't build your own website. He said, I'll give you a piece of advice now. Focus on the stuff that you're really good at. And the stuff that you're not, pay the best people you can afford to do that. And I said, I don't think you understand, mate. I haven't got any money. So I can't pay anybody to build me a website, which is why I'm having to go to take night classes to do it. And he said, no, there's always more than one way to skin a cat. He said, you're looking at all these big web design companies who are going to charge you thousands of pounds. He said, there's a lad in the year below you at university, does this sort of stuff for fun. He says, bung him a couple hundred quid, he'll build you one. And it was that mindset of, you know, yes, go on. Even though I didn't really have any money to pay anybody, thinking outside the box led me to another solution. And it's always that, have an open mind, there's always another way to skin a cat, trust me. And always get the best people you can to do it. Now I pay big people lots of money to build me websites, right? But then when I was a small company, that it was so bad. If I'd spent 8 weeks going on night classes to build a website, which, let's face it, would have been rubbish, right? And I would have wasted hours and hours and days, whereas actually 200 quid, kid in the year below us did it, and it was brilliant.
So if Sarah from today could go back and give Sarah back then some advice, what would it be?
So I think the thing that I would always love to have told little Sarah is, and you'll get this, especially as women, I think I was always trying to be, I just suffered from imposter syndrome so much in my 20s, and I was always trying to be good enough to be in whatever room I'd been invited into, you know, and I was always trying to pretend I was something I wasn't to justify where I'd got myself into, whether it was on a board or whether it was in to go to a big meeting or something. And so I never felt like I was good enough. I felt like I was always having to try and pretend to be somebody else to be there. And then, you know, once I got into my 30s, I stopped feeling like that. And I started just having the self-confidence and self-belief to think, that room's bloody lucky to have me in it. Never mind, you know, I'm not good enough to be there. So I just think I'd love to tell little Sarah that she was good enough.
What was it, do you think, looking back, that allowed that shift to happen? Because I think so many people listening, and probably myself and Wendy included, suffer from that even now. Like, you know, we're in our 40s. So what did you do back then to have that shift happen in your head?
Do you know, I think the Dragon's Den thing was a big part of it. So I remember when I got to go on Dragon's Den feeling like, oh my God, I'm so lucky that I'm on Dragon's Den. And I'm sitting next to Deborah Mead, and she's like She's Deborah Meaden, and I've got to be Deborah Meaden or Peter Jones to be able to be here. And so I was trying to overthink everything. And then I don't know what it was, but I eventually had this realisation of, if they wanted another Deborah Meaden, they would have hired another Deborah Meaden. They didn't. They hired me. And they knew that what they were getting, because I was really honest in my interview, and I was like, do you know what? I'm not as dragony as the other dragons you have on there. I don't know if this is right for you. And if it's not, then I'm going to accept that it's not. So, yeah, I think it's that realisation of, you know, they hired me. And also, and I say this to people a lot who suffer from imposter syndrome, I'm not the one who made the decision as to whether or not I was good enough to be on Dragon's Den. That was not my call. That was an executive producer that was signed off by a commissioner, that was signed off by the head of BBC. You know, they are the people who decide who's good enough to be a dragon. And they decided I was good enough. So my job is to just go and live up to that expectation and go and be the best version of me that I can be and be myself in that chair. And I think the difference is I sat in the chair on the first series thinking, I'm so lucky to be here. And then I sat in the chair on this last series 6 years later thinking, they're so lucky to have me here. And it's that self-confidence, you know, and it just comes with time. But you've got to have the self-belief.
And in those 6 years, is there that one that got away, the business that you wanted, that you still feel irked about?
Do you know, no, I'm because I won't allow myself to sit there and think that way. So what we do is we film about 100 pictures for a series. And at that time, you know, sometimes if it's been a big day and there's one investment I've gone for and one of the other dragons has got it and I'm absolutely gutted that night or whatever, next day is a new day, we'll get another investment. So after I finish the series, I've generally acquired about a dozen new businesses to work with, and I put all my energy and focus into those businesses, which means that by the time the actual airing of the series rolls around 6 months later, I've forgotten about the 90 that I didn't get, and I'm focused on the 10 or so that I did. But then you do watch the new series and I think, oh, I forgot about them. Oh, they were a good one then. But again, I'm thinking about it that night, and then the next day I'm on to worrying about my own businesses. So I just don't let myself focus on what if or the negatives. I always focus my time on the positives.
I love that. Finally, Zara, we know you've done Strictly and we love watching you on that. Would you do any other reality shows? I mean, I'm thinking you'd be really good on Celebrity Traitors. What do you reckon?
Well, we love Traitors in our house. But I watch this and I think, oh, would I go on Traitors if he asked me? Hell yes, I would. Looks like so much fun, right? But then would I be any good as a traitor? I think I'd be rubbish as a... I'd be a brilliant faithful. I think I'd be rubbish as a traitor. I'd be no good in the jungle because I'm frightened of snakes. I'm actually frightened of the dark as well. 40-year-old, I'll admit that.
That's why you'd be excellent in the jungle, though. That's why you definitely
need
to do it.
Not for herself. Oh, no. She'd be excellent for us all laughing at her.
I can't ice skate, so I'd be no good on that other ice skate and dancing programme. So baking, I love to bake. I'm hoping they might ask me if I'll do that one day. They keep asking me to do Celebrity Mastermind, and I'm like, this is really not a good idea, guys. It's not going to work. It's not going to bode well for the BBC or for me. I think we should just call it quits at that one. Would I lie to you? Celebrity, would I lie to you? Yes. Now that I'd be good at.
That would be really good. That would be good. Oh, Zara, thank you so much for joining us today. It has been so fab to chat to you.
I have thoroughly enjoyed it. I could talk all day, especially about the kids and the challenges of parenting.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on all social channels, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Just type in Netmums and you'll find us. And if you liked what you've heard today, we'd love for you to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button, and share the podcast on all your socials.